طفلة تمتطيه قوس قزح، طفلة تمتطيه قوس قزح من مخيم إلى بلد مهجر، من مخيم.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly broadcast of news, analysis, commentary, and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's brutal occupation and colonization of their homeland. The purpose of This Week in Palestine is to feature the Palestinian narrative, the Palestinian voice that is too often missing in the presentation of news and analysis in the American mainstream media. This Week in Palestine was created by Sharif Pham, and we continue it in his memory. This is John Roberts. On November 12, 2019, UMass Amherst held its second blockbuster pro-Palestinian conference of the year, taking on the Zionist lobby's attempt to censor speech on American campuses. Labeled criminalizing dissent, the attack on BDS and pro-Palestinian speech, a panel featuring Cornel West, Linda Sarsour, Sean King, Omar Barghouti, Tim Wise, and Dimi Khalidi was held at UMass Amherst's Fine Arts Center in front of a capacity crowd, despite being condemned by university officials and right-wing pro-Israel pressure groups. The panel addressed mounting efforts by the U.S. political leaders, right-wing lobbying groups, and college and university administrators to silence pro-Palestinian speech on American campuses and criminalize support for BDS, a nonviolent movement that seeks to pressure Israel to end its violation of Palestinian human rights. Topics included the recent bipartisan vote by the U.S. House of Representatives to condemn BDS, a new U.S. Department of Education policy that threatens to withdraw federal funding from institutions that allow pro-Palestinian speech critical of Israeli policy, and a formal statement issued by the Chancellor of UMass condemning the event. Over the next couple of weeks, This Week in Palestine will feature most of the speakers giving their individual presentations, as well as the final panel discussion featuring them all. This week we begin with UMass Professor Suk Jolly, organizer of the event, followed by moderator Linda Sarsour and Omar Barghouti, speaking from Palestine via Skype.
Good evening and welcome to this special event, Criminalizing Dissent, the Attack on BDS and Pro-Palestinian Speech. I am Suk Jolly, Professor of Communication at UMass and Executive Director of the Media Education Foundation. If you didn't know what the attack on BDS referred to, the nonviolent boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement against Israel's flagrant violation of international law, I think that opening video is a pretty good demonstration. And I hope that by the time you leave here today, you'll have a very good and clear idea of what BDS is, and more importantly, what it is not, and why it terrifies the defenders of Israel's indefensible actions against the Palestinian people. First, a little background. This is a follow-up event, as the video indicated, to one that took place here in May, entitled Not Backing Down. Many of you, I know, were here for that, and people have described it as one of the most electrifying and exhilarating events they've ever experienced. You must probably also know that it was the subject of a failed lawsuit to prevent it happening in the first place. So when we conceived of this follow-up event, we initially chose the subject matter as dealing with the close links of solidarity that exist between the African-American freedom struggle and the Palestinian freedom struggle. But as wider events started to unfold, we realized that there was something much more timely and urgent to focus on, and that was the unrelenting attacks that were occurring on free speech to prevent any honest discussion of Israel's illegal military occupation of Palestine and its stranglehold of Gaza even taking place. In fact, speaking critically about the policies of the Israeli state towards Palestinians seemed to be increasingly criminalized. As the opening video makes clear, the attacks were coming from everywhere, from Congress, from state legislators, from the corporate media, from the very White House itself. The reason that BDS co-founder Omar Barghouti is appearing via webcam tonight and not in person is because he is banned from entering the country, banned from entering the United States. In this situation, about the only place left in the society where you can talk honestly about Israel-Palestine is the American campus. And it's for this reason that universities and colleges now are under a sustained right-wing attack to ban criticism of Israel on campus. And there are billions of dollars being expended on that effort. The autonomy and independence of the campus is under real threat. And the only acceptable administrative response should be an explicit and strong defense of its faculty and of academic freedom. A really good example of how to respond to intimidation is provided by Duke University President Vincent Price and its provost Sally Kornbluth. When the Trump administration, when the Trump Department of Education, under the leadership of Betsy DeVos, applied financial pressure to Duke University for not being pro-Israeli enough in its programs, Prince and Kornbluth were unequivocal in their response. Quote, "We want to be very clear. No outside entity will determine what Duke faculty will teach, how they teach it, what they choose to research or write about, or who can speak on our campus. Be assured that we will continue to be vigilant in protecting and advancing academic freedom at Duke." Unquote. Any administrative response less forceful in this climate is a capitulation to reactionary forces. As one of my colleagues from Michigan remarked, one difference between a great university and a middling one is its staunch support of its faculty's freedom of expression. So when we announced that the event tonight would focus on the increasing attacks on pro-Palestinian speech, and BDS in particular, we knew there would be pushback, and we were prepared for the predictable attacks that came from the usual right-wing groups. We just did not think the attack would also be internal and come from our own chancellor. In an astonishing statement that he did not have to make, the Chancellor Swaboswamy, while adhering to First Amendment principles and not cancelling the event, then went on to list every right-wing talking point about BDS and the Palestine freedom struggle to argue that the planned event, this event, was troubling and disturbing and did not have a place at UMass. But perhaps the most disturbing aspect of his statement was the framing of this event as one that was organized by a sinister outside organization designed to divide and polarize the campus. This was especially puzzling to me, as I was one of the main organizers, and I know, I've only been teaching here for the last 35 years. In addition, the co-sponsor and organizer of the event is Professor Stellan Vinthagen, and the UMass Academic Unit directs the Resistance Studies Initiative. Also, Professor Milka Shabazz of the African American Studies Department was one of the people organizing this event. Now, whatever else you may think of this event, of this gathering tonight, it is clearly driven by the scholarly interests of those of us who are an integral part of the intellectual and scholarly fabric of this campus. And so my question is, why would the Chancellor deliberately frame things in this disingenuous way and imply that the issues we are going to examine are not legitimate topics for discussion at a public university? Why would he echo the exact framing of the right-wing opponents of free speech on this campus? Now, Chancellor Sabaswamy's statement did not go unnoticed by a very large number of UMass faculty, over 130, in fact, of whom, in reaction, signed their own statement of support for today's event, affirming and defending the values that drew so many people to the university, its proud history as an independent and progressive institution that affirms the right of its faculty to conduct research and teach the truth, even when it may cut against the grain of powerful and repressive forces. Palestinian students, too, responded to the silencing of their concerns by the Chancellor with their own forceful statement. And in a highly unusual move, over 40 faculty at UMass Boston wrote a pointed response to the Chancellor challenging his view of the situation. The local chapter of JVP, Jewish Voice for Peace, also directly challenged the idea that criticizing Israel's action was anti-Semitic and insisted their support for Palestinian human rights was a direct reflection of their deep Jewish values. And lastly, but not least, another statement in support of academic freedom at UMass has been signed by leading international scholars, including Noam Chomsky, Angela Davis, who very much wanted to be here today but could not come, Rashid Khalidi, and Robin Kelly, among many, many others. And just today, the faculty union here, the MSP, the Massachusetts Society of Professors, just released a really powerful statement supporting this event and why it was so important for academic freedom. This solidarity of people, both local and international, in support of this event, and the type of engaged scholarship that has always been valued at UMass has been truly heartening. And I feel actually truly proud and honored to be part of this incredible intellectual community. Before we proceed to the next speaker, I just want to take a moment to recognize and honor... Can we get the next slide? I just want to take a moment to recognize and honor the loss of one of our most valued and cherished colleagues this year. Just 3 days after the last event in May, Dan Clawson of the Sociology Department unexpectedly passed away. Dan was a model of an engaged scholar, a leading researcher in the area of organized labor, of higher education and inequality, who was also one of the most committed activists for social justice that one could imagine. He was also one of the most honorable and decent people I've ever met, as well as being one of the smartest and insightful political strategists around. When the opposition to the last event in May started, Dan actually was the first person I sought out for advice about how to respond. His family and his friends miss him dearly, and his colleagues and the institution will also miss him. He was here for 40 years. I cannot imagine a UMass without him. Now, Dan was a great believer in the power of collective action. So to honor him, I'd like to do something together, a solidarity clap. And I'll demonstrate. We start off clapping slowly, and then we gradually get faster. So, for Dan. very happy at the event taking place today. I'd like to introduce now our amazing moderator for the evening, Linda Sarsour. Linda was a co-founder of the Women's March, and she is executive director of Empower Change, the largest Muslim-led social and racial justice organization in the United States. She has been involved in campaigns addressing police surveillance of Muslim communities, of police brutality, of immigration policy, and mass incarceration. She was also has organized Black Lives Matter demonstrations, and as I'm sure some of you know, she was the lead plaintiff in a suit challenging the legality of the Trump travel ban. In her own words, quote, "She is every Islamophobe's worst nightmare." Please welcome Linda Sarsour.
A few months ago, and I thought I would never get invited back, but here I am. I am again deeply honored and humbled to be here, and I thank MEF and Sut, who's always getting me into all kinds of trouble, but as he said, he doesn't have to do much because I'm always in trouble all on my own by myself. I don't need anybody else to get me in trouble. But I'm happy to be back, and I'm happy to be back with this absolute rock star panel. I mean, the last time it was rock star, and I was like, Soot is not going to be able to do better than this. And then he just ups me one every time. So just wanted to give you a couple of updates about me since the last time that you saw me. I'm still as unapologetically Palestinian-American as I was when I was back here in May. I am still unapologetically Muslim-American. And always unapologetically from Brooklyn, New York. I mean, lots of things have happened in the last few months. Lots of great things have happened. And that's really important about the conversation that we're about to have, because oftentimes we come to these events to share with everyone all the bad things and all the things that opposition is doing, and they are doing. And they're pretty powerful people. But I always realize that we're also really powerful too. And as much as opposition tries to criminalize us and tries to vilify us and tries to knock us down, we just keep getting up. And every time we get up, we're taller than we were when we were knocked down the first time. And so for me, I am always deeply grateful for the communities that I'm a part of, the solidarity movements that I'm a part of, for the wonderful groups even here at UMass who have supported us, the wonderful and bold and courageous faculty, the groups like JVP Western Mass and the SJP chapter here on this campus and all their friends and colleagues. Listen, we are in these really interesting times, and I actually, with all that we see and all the negativity that we see around us, I'm actually grateful to be alive to witness the type of history that we are all witnessing that is happening right now. Sometimes we gotta wait decades later to look back at the moment and realize that we are making history, that we are part of history, that history is happening, but you are living it. We are living it. I am living it. And I'm so proud to be alive and witness it with all of you. Since the last time you saw me, I've been named a 2020 Roddenberry Fellow. I actually, this is self-promotion and I have to do it because my publisher makes me do these things. I wrote a book. Yeah, they're not going to be really happy about my book that's coming out. But anyway, I have a book that's coming out in March 2020. I would love for you to support me. It's one of the first times you see, you know, Palestinian American Muslim woman in hijab that's super spicy, that has been picked up by a major publisher. So my book is called We Are Not Here to Be Bystanders. This is my message to everyone. It's in every cause and every issue that I work on immigrant rights, on issues around Palestine, around being in solidarity with revolutions around the world, saying that Black lives matter, or saying that immigrants deserve to be treated with dignity and respect, and we all deserve to be in spaces where we feel safe and can be who we are. It all goes back to one thing that I believe, We are not here to be bystanders. We are not here to be bystanders to injustice, whether that's here in the streets of Massachusetts, or it's in Brooklyn, New York, or in Oakland, or in Bolivia, or in Chile, or in Palestine, or in any part of the world. We are not here to be bystanders. And just to share with you, you know, obviously, I guess MEF is nonpartisan. I don't even know, but I think they are. So I'm going to say that as a disclaimer before they get in trouble. But I'm also a national surrogate for Bernie Sanders, and this is why this is important. And there, trust me, I got a point. I got a point. You know, while we hear all of this, and you'll hear the opposition, the criminalization of dissent, and the ways in which those who stand up against the state of Israel and the human rights violations against the Palestinian people, and the way that right-wing Zionist lobby groups are lobbying against the rights of Palestinians and against the rights of Americans to engage in free speech, all of that is happening. But we also got to talk about what else is happening. Voices for the self-determination of the Palestinian people is getting louder. And it's getting louder in places that you wouldn't presume for it to get louder. And that is at the highest echelons of the Democratic Party. When I hear a Jewish candidate for president, one of the greatest political leaders that this country has ever seen, say that the fight against anti-Semitism is also the fight for Palestinian freedom. That happened here in your lifetime and in my lifetime. When we are hearing presidential candidates be cornered into saying that we must end the military occupation of the Palestinian people, when presidential candidates are being asked whether or not they would leverage U.S. aid to Israel to pressure them to stop the human rights violations on the Palestinian people, that's been a long time coming, sisters and brothers, and that is because of you and your voices and your work and the political power that our movements are building together, not just those who support Palestine, but all movements. The intersectional movement that exists today is making history, not only for the people of Palestine, but for all of us here. And I'm so grateful to, again, be alive and be here with all of you. Now, it might get really hard, and I get it. I mean, I was telling folks before, when I wake up in the morning and I breathe, I'm controversial. I don't even have to say anything. My life is hard when I wake up, but it's worth it. Worth it. It's worth it, and I'm going to be who I am, and I hope that you too will stand in your convictions and your principles and know that it may be hard today, but one day you will look back and say, I was so proud to be on the right side of history. Once you see the groups of folks, those who've spoken before me and those who will speak tonight, and the many supporters of the groups like MEF and the work that they're trying to do, you really got to ask yourself a question. Whose team do you want to be on? I want to be on the team with Dr. Cornel West. I want to be on the team with Soot Jolly. I want to be on the team with Sean King. I want to be on the team with Mark Lamont Hill and Dave Zirin and Roger Waters and Angela Davis. That's the team that I want to be on. And if you find yourself on the opposite side of that team, got a lot of questions to ask yourself. I'm just saying. Here today. And many of you know him, and it is absolutely disgraceful that our country is so scared of people who speak truth to power that this brilliant man has been banned from entering our country. And one day we will have a new president. And he will also be making history, by the way, because our new president will be the first Jewish American president that this country has ever seen. And then Mr. Omar Barghouti will be welcomed into these United States of America with open arms. Omar Barghouti is a founding committee member of the Palestinian Campaign for the Academic and Cultural Boycott of Israel. He's also a co-founder of the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement. He has received the Gandhi Peace Award in 2017. He's probably one of the most peaceful men you've ever met in your life, contrary to everybody else and the opposition. But I'm very proud to be on the stage here, and still my heart is heavy to know that he couldn't be here in person with all of us to share this moment but I would love to give him the opportunity to share his wise words with us before we start the rest of this panel. Thank you, UMass Amherst, for having me here again, and I hope to be back.
Greetings from Palestine. I hope everyone can hear me. This last April, the Trump administration banned me from entering the U.S., as was mentioned, without providing a reason. Given my regular travel to the U.S. for many years, this ban seems to be an ideologically and politically motivated measure that fits in with Israel's escalating repression against human rights defenders. Israel's far-right regime is not merely continuing its decades-old military occupation, settler colonialism, apartheid, and ethnic cleansing against Palestinians. It's increasingly outsourcing its anti-democratic tactics to the U.S. They've tried to silence my voice, but here I am. Their McCarthyite repression has failed. As Israel becomes a role model for far-right, xenophobic, or authoritarian leaders across the world, from Trump and Salvini to Orban, and from Bolsonaro and Modi to Mohammed bin Salman, the BDS movement for Palestinian rights has become a significant partner in a growing international progressive wave, fighting for global justice against the forces of fascism, xenophobia, and savage neoliberalism. Gaza is under attack again today. But even before the horror of Israel's full-blown bombing, from the start of the Great March of Return in 2018 to end Israel's brutal siege and assert the right of return for Palestinian refugees, Israeli army snipers have implemented what Human Rights Watch calls a premeditated shoot to kill or maim policy, slaughtering dozens and injuring thousands of peaceful Palestinians, including children, medics, journalists, and people with disabilities. UN investigators have recently concluded that Israel's acts in Gaza, quote, may constitute war crimes or crimes against humanity, unquote. Israel's 12-year-old siege of Gaza has in fact included counting the per capita calories that are allowed in to keep the 2 million Palestinians there on the brink of starvation, as was admitted by Israeli officials. It has reduced Gaza into not just a prison camp, as former British Prime Minister David Cameron once described it, but into an unlivable territory by 2020. That's around the corner, according to the United Nations. In parallel to its televised rolling massacre in Gaza, Israel's land-grabbing construction of illegal settlements and its gradual ethnic cleansing, especially in occupied Jerusalem, the Jordan Valley, and the Naqab, are accelerating. Its relentless home demolitions, arrest and torture of children, and apartheid walls are designed to make our lives so bitter that we would transfer ourselves, as one honest Israeli minister once admitted. South Africa's Speaker of Parliament, Ms. Baleka Mbete, said, quote, apartheid in South Africa was a picnic compared to what we have seen in the occupied Palestinian territories, end quote. This is what the ongoing Nakba looks like in 2019. With the unparalleled support for its fanatic policies by the Trump administration and the shameful complicity of the EU, Israel has become so drunk with impunity and colonial arrogance that it is dropping its thin, worn-out mask of democracy. It is shedding the veneer of accepting even a Palestinian Bantustan and cheering the Trump era of global bullying as a rare opportunity to bury for good the Palestinian right to self-determination. Yet, we're not asking for charity. We're asking for responsibility, accountability, and solidarity. Solidarity levels the playing fields with the colonizers and gives us hope, which is resilient and contagious. This is precisely why Israel is desperately trying to suppress the nonviolent BDS movement for Palestinian rights. As a key part of Palestinian popular nonviolent resistance, and the most effective and hopeful form of international solidarity with our struggle for emancipation. Launched in 2005 by the broadest coalition in Palestinian society, BDS calls for three rights: ending Israel's 1967 occupation, ending its institutionalized system of racial segregation and discrimination, which meets the UN definition of apartheid, and upholding the right of Palestinian refugees to return to their homeland. BDS is deeply rooted in decades of Palestinian popular resistance to settler colonialism, and it's inspired and strongly influenced by the South African anti-apartheid movement and the US civil rights movement. Americans have a long and honorable history of using boycotts for social, political, and economic justice causes against the Montgomery Buses Company, California grape growers, the states of North Carolina and Arizona over anti-LGBT and anti-immigrant laws, respectively, and now against Trump's racist agenda. Similarly, Palestinians seek to use peaceful economic and cultural leverage to achieve our liberation. Anchored in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, BDS has consistently and categorically opposed all forms of racism and racial discrimination, including anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, anti-Black, anti-Indigenous racism, sexism, and anti-LGBT discrimination, among others. One's identity, the movement upholds, should never diminish one's entitlement to rights. BDS targets complicity, not identity. Since there is nothing Jewish about Israel's crimes against Palestinians, there is nothing inherently anti-Jewish then about a nonviolent, morally consistent human rights struggle to end this system of oppression. As Israel shifts steadily to the far right, forging alliances with xenophobic, racist, and patently anti-Semitic forces in the US, Europe, Brazil, India, and elsewhere, and simultaneously, as the impact of BDS continues to rise, Israel's popularity is declining worldwide. In this context, US defenders of Israel's human rights violations have desperately invested massive political and financial resources in the last few years to suppress speech on Palestinian rights and demonize BDS. Through intimidation, spying, and weaponizing claims of anti-Semitism, they're trying to keep Israel, quote, on a pedestal, as Archbishop Desmond Tutu of South Africa once said, above accountability and beyond censure. At the root of the mushrooming false claims of anti-Semitism flying about is a desperate attempt by Israel and its supporters to promote a new anti-Palestinian definition of anti-Semitism that, quote, serves to shield Israel from being held accountable to universal standards of human rights and international law, as stated last year by more than 40 progressive Jewish groups worldwide led by Jewish Voice for Peace. Daniel Blattman, a prominent Israeli Holocaust expert and chief historian of the Warsaw Ghetto Museum, was even more blunt in his criticism of this new anti-Semitism definition, especially after the German parliament declared BDS to be anti-Semitic. He said, "That is how a country where anti-Semitism was a political tool that contributed to the rise of the Nazis' murderous enterprise became a country that promotes distortion of anti-Semitism as a tool to facilitate the political persecution of a nonviolent BDS movement that fights the occupation, the oppression of the Palestinians, and the war crimes Israel perpetrates in the territories." End of quote. As reported in the Israeli daily Haaretz last February, the Israeli government faced criticism for hosting the prime ministers of the Czech Republic, Slovakia, and Hungary, who the paper describes as being accused of being anti-immigrant and anti-Semitic. In response, a Likud member of parliament, Ms. Anat Berko, defended Israel's current attitude towards anti-Jewish racism, saying, and please listen carefully, she said, quote, "They might be anti-Semites, but they are on our side," end of quote. Given all this, Israel's far-right regime is evidently in no position to accuse anyone of anti-Semitism. Israel's fraudulent anti-Semitism smears against human rights defenders in the anti-racist BDS movement sound as credible as Trump's environmental protection credentials. While defending our freedom of expression and being vigilant against all forms of racism, including real anti-Jewish racism, we're intensifying our campaigns to further multiply the impact of our BDS movement. We're strengthening our principled and intersectional alliances with global movements for racial, indigenous, social, economic, gender, and climate justice. As Angela Davis always reminds us, justice is indivisible. BDS tactics have been adopted by a number of U.S. mainline churches, student governments in tens of universities, academic associations, racial and social justice groups, and many artists. Trade unions and political parties across the world are also adopting pressure tactics against Israel. Just this few weeks ago, the UK Trade Union Congress, representing millions of working people in Britain, voted for ending military trade with Israel and to pressure corporations to end complicity in its violations, and so did the British Labour Party. In May, instead of attracting the anticipated 40 to 50,000 tourists to flood Tel Aviv, the Eurovision Song Contest attracted a mere 5,000 visitors. Over 100 LGBTQ groups in Europe and many prominent artists joined our call to boycott the contest in apartheid Tel Aviv. In response to these and thousands of other indicators of the growing impact of BDS, Israel and its far-right allies worldwide have intensified their global war on the BDS movement, including extensive propaganda, legal warfare, and espionage. Israel has dedicated an anti-BDS government ministry, a whole ministry, to desperately establish, to fight BDS, and it desperately established a tarnishing unit, that's the official name, a tarnishing unit, to smear Palestinian, Israeli, and international human rights defenders in the BDS movement. As a co-founder of this movement, I've had my share of this smearing and repression. Israel has imposed arbitrary travel bans on me over the last 5 years, including in 2018, when I was prevented from traveling to Jordan to accompany my late mother during cancer surgery. Israel's intelligence minister threatened me in 2016 with, quote, targeted civil elimination, drawing condemnation from Amnesty. And I'm far from alone. There have always been attempts to muzzle Palestinian voices, but wherever we live, at home or in exile, Palestinians remain steadfast in our commitment to fight not only repression and McCarthyism, but also apartheid and settler colonialism. Solidarity with Palestine today means intensifying pressure to end the complicity of the US government, corporations, and institutions in enabling Israel's system of oppression. That's hardly charitable. That's a profound moral obligation to do no harm. This includes cutting the billions of dollars in military aid to Israel as part of shifting US priorities from militarization and global domination to investing in health, education, sustainable jobs, protecting the environment, and reparations for Native Americans and for Black Americans. To end Israel's regime of oppression and its anti-Palestinian authoritarian allies, fear our shining a light of truth that reveals their lies. They dread our tireless quest for justice and equality. They loathe our love for freedom and our insistence on nothing less than an existence with dignity and the full menu of rights, to borrow from South African leader Desmond Tutu. United, we shall and must prevail over all oppression. Thank you.
You have been listening to Suck Jolly, Linda Sarsour, and Omar Barghouti speaking at the UMass Amherst Conference on Criminalizing Dissent. Next week, we will continue coverage of the conference, featuring presentations by Tim Wise, Cornell West, and Dimi Kaladi. And that is our program this morning. Thank you for listening to This Week in Palestine, a weekly feature of Truth and Justice Radio. You will find us here at 90.3 FM every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. You can also stream us live on your computer at WZBC.org. If 8 a.m. is too early on a Sunday morning, you can listen to us later in the day or at any time of the week on your computer via the Instant Archive found on the WZBC homepage. Simply go to WZBC.org, click on Sunday morning, 8 a.m., and click on Listen. However, each program is only on this archive for 2 weeks. After that, you can hear it in all of our past broadcasts on our permanent archive. Simply access truthandjusticeradio.org, all one word, truthandjusticeradio.org on your browser, and click on This Week in Palestine Archives. It is all there. Thanks for listening, and we hope you will join us again next Sunday and every Sunday for another edition of This Week in Palestine. You are tuned to WZBC 90.3 FM, Newton, Massachusetts, and this is John Roberts wishing you a good morning.